trade deadline has passed, and Sean, this was quite a day. It's still a day. We're recording this now 4.5 hours, about that, roughly after the trade deadline has passed. A trade really just trickled in. In fact, about 15 minutes ago before we got on this one here on Monday night. But this is your deadline edition of the NHL At The Ring podcast. And how's your how you holding up today?
I feel like I've been put through the gauntlet. But that's what trade deadline's about, right?
Yeah.
It's a rush to a deadline and then sorting out everything that's happened. So, you know, 32 trades today. Huge number. It's been a long time since I can remember that number of trades. I mean, a lot of them were smaller trades. And then you think about, you know, Friday and Saturday and Sunday leading up to it. This, you know, this was a big deadline when everybody thought it was going to be dull.
Yeah.
Especially when some of the big names went early and you're sitting there and you're thinking about, you know, the deadline shows and your deadline blog, which was fantastic, that ran today. But, you know, and you know, who's going to be on the national teams, all those exercises that they have to do to fill when nothing happens. Everything happened this weekend, and you're like, there's going to be nothing on Monday, and then everything happened on Monday.
Yeah, we always do that, right? We see trades going on across the weekend and we're like, oh man, Monday's going to be a dud. And Monday, it's not a dud. It may not always be like it was today, which was, you know, frantic, especially like once 2 o'clock Eastern hit, it seemed like every trade was going through at that point. You know, I remember, so I'm doing our trade deadline blog, by the way, 7,356 words, about the same number of emails you probably sent today. So we do our 7,000s in different ways. But you know what? There's so much that happened late. But Sean, I want to start with the big one, right? I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury, there was months of speculation. Is this guy going to waive his Is he going to agree to get traded? And then it was like, well, Mark wants to stay. He wants to stay. And we kept saying, you know, I don't know. He's a very competitive guy. We never rule this out, right? Very competitive. And what wins out? Competition. Competition wins out. And the Minnesota Wild won out to get his services for a conditional first round pick. And look, I mean, I think the Wild are better in net. No question about it. They get Marc-Andre Fleury. They trade Kaapo Kähkönen to the San Jose Sharks. Now it's Fleury and Talbot, not Talbot and Kähkönen. They're better. It wasn't a huge price to pay to get it. And now Marc-Andre Fleury has an opportunity to go play important regular season games down the stretch, win a job, because he's going to have to do that. He's going to have to play better than Talbot in order to be the game one starter. But there's competition now, and that won out in the end. He didn't want to stay in Chicago, where there was really just play out the string. This guy wanted to keep going. And to me, it's also a sense of he's not done after this season either.
No, he said he's not done. But to me, like, I look at this and I look at the Claude Giroux trade, and to me, they're the same thing. That they're established NHL players casting their lot with teams that are not generally have their lots casted by star players. Claude Giroux picked the Florida Panthers earlier in the week and said, this is the team I want to go to for a number of reasons. But one of them, and the major one, was this is a team I think can win the Stanley Cup, and that's what I want on my resume. So that's a huge boost for the Florida Panthers. You know, when has that ever happened for them? And I thought Bill Zito was great. He's like, that's really flattering. We've won 2 playoff games. You know, we need to do better, and this is one step in it. The same thing with the Minnesota Wild. How often have star players said, you know where I want to go and try and chase a cup is Minnesota? And now you take the reigning Vezina Trophy winner, one of the most popular players in hockey, a guy who could write his ticket and go anywhere he wanted to. And in the end, the reason that you said that the price wasn't exorbitant is because there was no competition. Marc-Andre wanted to go to Minnesota, and that was it. So, you know, once Billy Guerin gets wind of that, you can kind of draw back a little bit on your offer and say, well, we're the only ones in this race. That's why, you know, Philadelphia fans are up in arms now, because it was a seller's market and it was not a seller's price for Claude Giroux. But he said, I want to go to Florida. When there's nobody to bet against, you win the pot.
Yeah. And that was, those guys were in control. And we knew that all along, you know, that it was their decision. It was on them. And those teams that were trading them were not going to get the return on value that maybe what their value is because of the situation it is. With the Wild, also, I loved Billy Guerin's comments, the Wild GM, who we've had on this podcast, you know, recently, as a few weeks ago. I love the comment when he was asked about Cam Talbot and Marc-Andre Fleury, and he basically said, I don't care. Like, whatever. Like, go out and play. Win. We're in the winning business. That's what we're supposed to do here. We're supposed to win, and Cam Talbot's a terrific teammate. He's going to go out and try to win. Mark's a terrific teammate. He's going to go out and try to win. And you know what? Let's just win. I don't care about any, like, goalie controversy. There's no goalie controversy. There's goalie competition, but between those two, I loved what Billy said about that. Like, just cares. Let's go win.
I think you whitewashed it a little bit. I believe that he said, we don't have time for BS time.
Yes. And
it was the full, this is a G-rated podcast. Yeah, so I'm just nice. Going to BS it. But, and that's the tone he has to set, right? And that's the other thing. You sit in that room now in the Minnesota Wild and you have questions, especially because they struggled, you know, recently. And when we had Billy on, he was debating, you know, where is my team? Do I make a move? Do I not make a move? He ended up making a couple of moves. He got, you know, he got Nick DeLaurier as kind of to add a little bit of toughness, can do some other things, you know, is going to fit in their bottom six, you know, maybe be a deterrent to allow some of the skill players to have the freedom to run around and do what they want. And then he added, you know, an elite goalie. Again, the reigning Vezina Trophy winner, three-time Stanley Cup champion. You're sitting in that room and you had questions about your team and about what management thought of your team. You don't have those questions anymore. Mm-hmm. Now you walk into a game and you look at your goalie and you say, we can win. We can stink and we can win. And that is such a liberating feeling for a team, knowing that 9 times out of 10, they're going to have the advantage in goal.
Yeah, and they also got Jacob Middleton from San Jose, another snarly big defenseman who's going to wreak a little havoc on the back end too and help out the goaltending. And look, the question though, and I think the big question, we've talked about this, is a goalie moving at the deadline, the impact he can make. What kind of impact can he make? Because we've seen it before and it hasn't worked out. It very rarely does. I would say the last time it did was Dwayne Rolison in 2006, right, with Edmonton. You don't see goalies move at the deadline that much for the specific reason of it's like speaking a new language when you go to a new team. You know, you're working with new defensemen. You're working, systems are similar, but the language is different in how they communicate. And are you a goalie who likes to play the puck? Well, are they used to a goalie who likes to play the puck, or vice versa, things along those lines. But I get a sense, and think about what Ryan Miller, right, in 2014, goes to St. Louis. It doesn't work out. He was the big move. It goes to St. Louis, doesn't work out. But I get a sense that Marc-Andre Fleury is different. And I don't know if it's because just of who we know him to be and the type of teammate he is and how beloved he is. And you just think, like, you know, he just seems to ease things. It makes things look easier. And that's what he's been for his entire career. We'll see. Maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe you can't equate one with the other, but I get a feeling that if anybody can make this transition work, it is Marc-Andre Fleury, because A, you know, he has been transitioned. He just transitioned to a new team with Chicago. Yes, it was the offseason. He's not set in his ways, I don't think. He's more of a loose guy out there. And I think that's going to help as they try to transition to him.
Yeah, no, I think it'll help. But I also think he's going back into what he was used to, right? Yeah. With Vegas a little bit. He's going from a Chicago team, and, you know, nothing against the Chicago Blackhawks, but it was chaos. You know, he 5 2-on-1s a game, cross-ice passes flying all over the place. Like, his numbers aren't as good as they were in Vegas because his defense wasn't as good as it was in Vegas. Now, I'm not saying that the Minnesota Wild have this defense equal to the Vegas Golden Knights, but they play a system that cuts down on those kind of opportunities. They're not going to trade chances back and forth. Their forwards are going to come back for the most part and help out in the defensive zone. So I don't know that Marc-Andre is going to be under as much duress as he was in Chicago, and that's going to make a huge difference. He's got Talbot to help ease the load. Like, he doesn't have to walk in and be the guy on day one. And if he struggles a little bit, all of a sudden you're looking at the standings and you're like, what's going on? Like, we brought this guy in to win everything. You have time to kind of ease him in and let him find his way. And I do think that Marc-Andre is such a free spirit that nothing really bothers him. And that goes for on the ice too. Like, it can be complete chaos and he's just like, hey, that's cool. Like, my job's to stop the puck. I'm not going to worry about anything else. And, you know, my defensemen mess up, I'll probably go pull a prank on him in the locker room to let him know it's okay. He's a unicorn when it comes to goaltending. I can't think of any other goaltender that's like him. Like, to me, Marty Brodeur was a little bit like him in the fact that nothing really ever bothered him, but Marty wasn't as outgoing and funny.
Right.
As Marc-Andre is. He's put every team he's ever been with at complete ease. And there aren't many goalies in the league that put their team at – they do on the ice, but otherwise, goalies, you're very trepidatious, if that's a word, around a goaltender.
Yes.
For the most part, and nobody is around Marc-Andre Fleury. He is one of the boys.
Well, he's a guy who talks to the posts and thanks them. You know, yeah, well, I mean, he hugs his posts at times, right? You know, so that's normal. But look, I think the Minnesota Wild, it goes without saying, are better today than they were better right now when they woke up today. I always thought they were a legit contender. They've struggled in recent times. This should give them a shot in the arm. By the way, it should also give Cam Talbot a shot in the arm too. Competition's increased now. Maybe he's got to up his game a little bit if he wants to play. So that's going to be interesting to see. Wanted to go back quickly to Florida, Sean, because I thought you brought up an important point. The Florida Panthers have never been a destination for anybody, really. I mean, let's be honest. And they were for Claude Giroux. We'll see where it goes from here. But that, to me, is a signal of how things have turned, is now the Florida Panthers might be a destination, you know, come free agency as well, because teams are going to look at that and the players are going to look at that and say, well, Claude Giroux wanted to go there, right? And look at all this talent here. And so I think this is big for this season in particular. Of course, that goes without saying, but I think it's big in the big picture too for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, I mean, they're building a long-term thing here. You look at the guys that are signed and how long they're signed for, their core pieces. Like, they're not going anywhere. Their goalie signed, their top forwards are signed, their best defenseman signed. And look, let's hope that Aaron Ekblad is better soon. He got hurt this week. He hurt his knee and it looked really bad at first. And now they're saying it's not quite as bad. He's week to week. They can survive without him. You know, they've put so many points in the bank that I don't think it's really an issue. But they need him back before playoffs come. You know, Ben Chiarot's not going to step into that spot. They need him back. And Ben Chiarot, they got from Montreal earlier in the week and kind of set everything in motion that ended up happening. But, you know, I think they are a destination. It's Florida. It's sunny. There's no tax, right? It's the same thing. You look at Tampa Bay. Why can Tampa Bay keep getting all the players that they get on cheap deals and, you know, everything else? It's because it's a destination. They've won. It's a cool place to be. The weather's great. You can make more money there because you're not paying taxes in part. And, you know, why can't Florida do that? Their building's full because they're winning. Like, it's a great atmosphere when they're winning. You know, everybody always says, oh, well, Florida, they don't fill their building. It's kind of hard to tell the difference between Sunrise and Tampa right now.
Yeah. And what's great is they might have to go through each other, right? And I even think that's even, again, and they started it last year. They might have to go through each other. But Sean, you brought up Tampa Bay. I wanted to go there next. They had about $4.57 in cap space, and they still made it work to acquire three players. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how Julian Breezeball does it, but he does it every single season. And I remember writing in a mailbag, somebody asked me a question a couple of weeks ago, like, do you see the Lightning standing pat or what? I'm like, I would never count Julian Breezeball out at the trade deadline. He's going to find a way. Somehow, he's going to find a way to make his team better. He acquires Brandon Hagel, paid a big price to get him from the Chicago Blackhawks, but that's a player who can score that will likely slide right into their bottom six, right? That to me was a great move. He goes out and gets Nick Paul. Another move helps out their bottom six, right? And also alleviates a potential cap concern for next season with Matthew Joseph. And he acquires Riley Nash from the Arizona Coyotes. Three players, two that will likely go into the lineup, will go into the lineup right away, and a third for depth purposes. Once again, he has remade the bottom six of the Tampa Bay Lightning in advance of the trade deadline to give them a best shot to go ahead. He does this every single season, and they're better. They're simply just better right now. And now you look at that, you can go to Corey Perry, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare, and Pat Maroon, and that's your fourth line maybe. And they've been playing somewhat like a third line this season.
Brisebois was the guy you needed in college for happy hour, right? We got $8 in our pocket.
Damn, darn right.
How much stuff can we, how much alcohol can we get? And there was always one guy that could figure it out, right? We're going to go here. They have this sale. We're going to go there. We're going to turn in our cans. And then the next thing you know, you have a party for $8. That's Julien Brisebois. I have no money.
Right.
Somehow I'm going to turn in these cans and I'm going to do this. And, you know, maybe I'll give a little blood and all of a sudden you're good to go. It's crazy. And good for him. And look, man, it's you look at the Atlantic and it's complete chaos. Yeah, Florida's better. Yeah, Tampa Bay's better. Everybody behind him tried to get better too. Like
Boston's better.
Quiet.
Toronto's everywhere. Better.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of quiet everywhere else. And then the Atlantic, they were just like, oh, yeah, you got Claude Giroux. Okay, here's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you got this guy. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. And you thought that the Tampa Bay Lightning would be out of it. And now it was time for everybody to catch up. And yeah, no, I need to give up two first round picks and two roster players, so to speak, kind of tweeners at this point, but it probably could be good players if they get more ice time than they would get in Tampa Bay. That's okay. I'll pay that price because he knows he can always get more players. We talked about it. Like, people want to go there. Corey Perry wanted to go there. Pat Maroon wanted to stay there. Like, and they did it on team-friendly deals. And he's always going to find players that will do it on team-friendly deals. As long as Stamkos is there and Hedman's there and they're winning, it's not, it's still an attractive destination, but it's not as attractive if you're sitting in fourth place in the Atlantic Division. Let's be honest.
Here's the difference between rebuilding and contending right now. The Tampa Bay Lightning have two picks in the first two rounds of the next three drafts. Two in the first three rounds of the next three drafts, or the first two rounds of the next three drafts. The Anaheim Ducks have 12. I think the Seattle Kraken have 154. You know, like, it's rebuilding and contending, right? That's the way it is. And the Tampa Bay Lightning could care less about draft picks. And if I'm looking at it right now, it's actually four total picks in the next three drafts across the first three rounds. Four. Like, they could care less about draft picks, and it's the right move. You give them up because you've got to get players that can help you win right now. I don't know, Sean, man. I like the Panthers a lot. I really do. I like what they did. I think the Bruins are coming. I think I love the addition of Lindholm. You believe in him that much to sign him to an 8-year deal as well. Toronto, I'm not in love with their goaltending for obvious reasons, so I don't put them quite in the category, but Tampa Bay is still the team to beat for me in that division because of their pedigree, goaltending, experience, what we know that they can do when the chips are down, and now because they're just better than they were yesterday.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is, you know, we talked about Marc-Andre Fleury and that jolt that he's going to give the Minnesota Wild. Vasilevsky is he's in on a different plane, right? And look, Bobrovsky's a good goalie. He's won the Vezina, but he's not in Vasi's class right now. And Swayman is unbelievable. We did our Calder Trophy tracker this past week. We tried to get it away from the trade deadline a little bit, three-quarter mark of the season. Mm-hmm. The quarter poll for the parimutuel bettors out there, that's the proper use of it. It was Saturday. But anyways, we did our Calder voting, and Swayman barely made a dent, right? It was the two kids in Detroit. It was Zegras. It was this guy. It was that guy. Go look at Swayman's numbers. Like, they're ridiculous, especially for a rookie. They're all time for a rookie, but they're competitive with – he probably should have had some say in the Vezina vote, but he didn't. So they have a good goalie. They have a good tandem, but I'm not putting any of those guys in Vasi's class, right? And especially in the playoffs. You take the last two playoffs and you're just like, oh, my God, you know, whoever plays them is going to be intimidated. And I don't care what they say. you could be the most offensive team in the world, and all of a sudden you look at a guy that's in a groove, and you start thinking about what he did. You know, Florida plays them, they start thinking about what he did to them, right, in the playoffs. He had a couple of rough games, and then he kind of really shut things down, and you know, that's going to get in guys' heads. You've seen it all the time, trying to pick corners, you know, not playing the way they normally play, overpassing, all those things. He's a guy, he's like a cleanup hitter that intimidates pitchers, right? Like Judge, right? He mm-hmm. from the Yankees, he's like that, with like where pitchers are changing the way they play, the way they pitch, because they're afraid of the guy who's in the batter's box. And that's what Vasilevskiy is inside the crease. He makes elite players change the way they think about the game.
Right. And you might go into a series thinking you won't, and then game one happens and you are in game two because of him. He's that type. He gets in your head. He's that type of goalie. By the way, the email just came across from NHL Public Relations. It was a total of 33 trades involving 54 players. I don't know how many draft picks right now, but 33 trades involving 54 players today. So that is quite a deadline day. There's no question about it. Sean, let's stay in the East, because I wanted to go to the Metro. We were talked a lot about the Atlantic, the Metro. So you have the New York Rangers and the Pittsburgh Penguins right now on a collision course to play each other in the first round. Things can happen. We know that there's still 20 games left for a lot of teams, 18 to 20 games left for a lot of teams, right? But the Rangers fill holes. They had Andrew Kopp, a nice versatile player. I think he's a sneaky good player that's probably a little underrated, because in A, it was playing in Winnipeg, and B, in Winnipeg, everybody talks about Kyle Connor and Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele and Nikolaj Ehlers. They're not talking about Andrew Kopp, but Andrew Kopp has been a good player for them. Versatile, can play all three positions, penalty kill, power play. So it's a nice add. Tyler Mott, good fourth line guy. Justin Braun, right-handed D. The Rangers fill holes. They filled out depth needs that they have, and that have been glaring for them. The one guy they didn't get that was all, you know, we were talking about the potential of them getting, was Ricard Raquel. And where does he go? Oh, he goes to the Pittsburgh Penguins, the team that they're on a collision course to play. I just thought it was a little bit of a fascinating thing between that. You saw the Rangers filling out their depth with some good moves that I agree with. And then the Penguins go and get the guy that everybody thought the Rangers were going to go get. And they could probably put Raquel, once he's back in the lineup, with Evgeny Malkin on a second line, and they're just that much better because of that. You know, they match skill. They added skill, whereas the Rangers added more of a, you know, just the, you know, the versatility, I guess. It's just an interesting little thing that happened. And between the Penguins and the Rangers right now, if they were to have a collision course to play, I'd like the Rangers skaters better. I'd like the Penguins skaters probably a little bit better. Although it's closer now, and I'd like the Rangers goaltending better.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis. I think Kopp really helps them kind of even out their lines, right? We've talked about how they're top heavy. He kind of helps slot everybody into place. And I think so does Vetrano, right? We've only seen him a little bit, but I've always liked his game. And, you know, I think they have a little bit more versatility now. I know Drury said today that maybe Kako comes back and sometime in April, you know, and they can add him back into the mix. So I feel like they're deeper and they're more organized, right? Like everybody kind of fits where they're supposed to. Nobody's playing up, nobody's playing down. Everybody's kind of where they need to be. And then, you know, you look at the Penguins and their top six is just frightening now. Mm-hmm. And the rest of their lineup, I think, has been good all year. And I think that's part of the reason that they've been as successful as they have been. And you're right, the difference may come in goaltending. Like I looked, you know, and we're going to do our Super 16 soon. And, you know, the Rangers have beaten a couple of good teams. They beat Carolina last night. And you would think that they would go up. But, like, to me, that game last night, you know, when they beat Carolina 2-0, was goaltending. I don't know how many games I've seen this year where one team dominated another team as much as the Carolina Hurricanes dominated the New York Rangers. I don't know what the expected goals were. It had to be uneven because Carolina basically held the puck. It was like the Harlem Globetrotters at times, where they were just holding the puck and they were cycling and they were putting them under pressure. And it was the Rangers' backup goalie. It wasn't even Shesterkin. You know, it was Gorgiev, and he played an unbelievable game, probably the best game he's played all year. But like, to me, that's the problem with the Rangers. Like when I see them play, that happens far too often. And the thing that concerns me, if I'm a Rangers fan, is I draw the Penguins and Mike Sullivan's sitting at the other side behind the bench. And all of a sudden he gets to work you over for 5, 6, 7 games. He gets to figure things out. He gets to study tape. And you know, I don't care how good a goalie you are. If you're under duress that much, at some point you're going to crack. And that's the thing that concerns me. I feel like the Penguins have a better opportunity to break down the Rangers than the Rangers have an opportunity to break down the Penguins.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment too. I think, although I don't think it was the impetus behind all the moves. I think Chris Drury, the Rangers GM, knew he had to do something. But I wonder if that type of game that they played against Carolina, and we understand how good Carolina is, right? That I wonder if that type of game they played against Carolina happens if Kopp is in the lineup, if Mott is in the lineup, if you still have Vetrano, then you add Kako and Kevin Rooney. You're putting five guys who you didn't have a week ago. Kako and Rooney are supposed to be back in early April. That's what Chris Drury said today. So you look at Kako, Rooney, Vetrano, Mott, and Kopp, and you're probably taking out Hunt, Gauthier, Johnny Brodzinski, Greg McKegan, maybe Ryan Reeves. The Rangers are like, that's a great 5-for-5 swap. No offense to the other guys, right? Like that's a 5-for-5 swap of guys right now that you could be putting in your lineup. And I'm sitting there going like, I don't know if that game happens the way it did. Cops. I saw it on Sportsnet today. Justin Bourne did a terrific piece on Kopp, talked about him just kind of being like an eraser in the D zone and how he just finds a way to track plays and intercept pucks and knock pucks down and then transition them the other way. The Rangers don't have that guy right now. They get stuck in their zone. They're stuck in their zone for a while. Kopp helps that. These guys aren't world beaters by any stretch, but I think they're better than what they had, you know, and I think that's the key thing for them. But Sean, your analysis on what the Penguins can do over a 7-game series to a team like the Rangers, if the Rangers play like they did against Carolina or like they have a lot this season, is spot on because Mike Sullivan's going to eat it up.
And they can't score 5-on-5. And what happens in the playoffs? You don't get a lot of power plays.
Yeah.
Right. So, but I have to take exception, Dan, with you. You had me the whole way. Oh, this guy's better than that guy. This guy's better than that. They're going to sit all these guys. And then you're like, they're going to sit Ryan Reeves. They cannot sit Ryan Reeves. Do you not listen to what's happening here? He is the third best forward on the New York Rangers. He makes everything go. How do you sit him?
Look, I like Ryan Reeves. I don't want to get on Ryan Reeves's bad side.
No.
You know, I do believe you're sarcastic here.
I'm not being sarcastic.
I'm just sensing a little bit of sarcasm. Look, and here's the thing. Ryan Reeves can become an important player for the Rangers.
I think he's a playoff player.
He's a playoff player, right? But it also depends on the opponent, too. And maybe you do use him against Pittsburgh because you look at the Penguins' fourth line, right? And they got a big Brian Boyle on that line. They got a Teddy Bluger on that line, right? I mean, he is an important player for you at that time. It's going to be interesting to see because now Gerard Gallant with the Rangers, once everybody's healthy, assuming everybody's healthy, we don't know, like assuming everybody's healthy, he's got options they didn't have before. And, so we'll see where it goes. But they absolutely have to be able to get out of their zone. If they can't get, like, it hasn't been as bad as it was against Carolina, but it's been bad at times. They absolutely cannot get stuck in their zone. I think guys like Mott and Kopp, their bottom six was getting caved in a lot in the possession game. Guys like Kopp and Mott will help that. Will it change everything? Well, I don't know about that, but it will help that, no question about it. But to look at on the other side, as we're talking about this, I like Ricard Raquel as a secondary scorer in Pittsburgh, man. Like, I think he's the type of player, too, that can play with Evgeny Malkin. Malkin's got to be a hard guy to play with at times because he can be unpredictable, whether he's going power game or he's going to the finesse game. Like, he does so many different things and he does them all well, but you got to be able to read off of him. Whereas like Sidney Crosby can be hard to play against, but you know where he's going to be, right? I mean, he's going to be low. He's playing below the, you know, low in the zone. Like, that's his game. Malkin's kind of a little bit all over the place, and he's a Hall of Famer all over the place. Raquel, I think, can handle that. I think Raquel can play that type of East-West slash North-South type of game and read off of Malkin. We'll see, but I like that. I think it could be. And if you get Jason Zucker back and he's on the men now, that's a pretty good second line with Zucker, Malkin, and Raquel behind a top line that would have Jake Guentzel, Sidney Crosby, and Brian Rust.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And I do. I think he's a smart player who can adapt, and that's why he was in demand, right? Because I think a lot of scouts realize that he's not a one-dimensional player. He can do different things in the offensive zone, and you know, it's improved his overall game, I think, a little bit from when he was younger. But you know, we're talking about both these teams added, and all the teams that added in the Atlantic and in the East. To me, the one team that nobody talked about, because they really didn't do anything until the very end, is Carolina. And I still think that they may have been the best team at the deadline in what they did, because they gave up very little. They got Max Domi in a complicated three-way trade. By the way, like, Bill Zito, the Florida GM, and Carolina somehow got one of his primary foes in the Eastern Conference to help him make a deal.
Yeah.
Like, Bill Zito, like, how do these guys, like, you're like, oh, Carolina will never help Florida, and Florida will never help Carolina. But to make that Domi deal happen, Florida had to get involved. And, you know, that's one of the small things you see at the deadline that you're like, what, how does that happen? But, you know, strange bedfellows and all that. But to me, that Carolina team is so good that I think Don Waddell knew that he didn't have to make a move and he didn't have to upset the apple cart. Like, he could just – because it's got to be terrifying when you start to watch everybody add, you know, when GMs are calling you up because they want you to panic. Well, I just heard that the Penguins are going to add Raquel, and I just heard that this guy's getting cop, and we don't even want to talk about what Florida's doing. Like, I got some things for you now, like, but you're going to pay a premium. And people all over the league played a premium, but Waddell didn't. Yeah. Here's my team, and I'm going to go to war with it, and I think we're good. And I think they are good.
And Domi's a nice player. He can score. He can move the puck well. He's a good playmaker. There's no question about it. They don't need to use him at center. Their center depth is strong. They can use him on the wing. They have a little bit of a need on the wing just to improve a little bit there. Need might be a strong word, but you know, they have a desire to improve a little bit there. So they get him. The fact that they were able to get Florida in says two things to me. One, Bill Zito is just so confident in his team, he doesn't care, right? And also he might have liked the player that they were getting in return, which was Igor Korshkov. I don't know anything about him, but they might like him.
Morial.
he's 25 years old already, so, and he's been playing in the KHL. So he did play one game with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but he might like that player. He might think there's a future for him. And the way things have been rolling for Bill Zito right now, that guy will be a Hart Trophy candidate in 4 years or something like that. But he just doesn't care. And B, he's probably thinking to himself, you know what? If we're going to face Carolina, we're probably not going to face him until the Eastern Conference Final. Hope we get there. If we get there, we're going to be a wagon anyway, so who cares, right? And Max Domi's not going to be the one that beats us. So Billy Zito says, I'll help you out. Give me a little asset in return, and away you go. I think that was probably his thinking. I don't know for sure. And regards to Carolina, you're right. I mean, sometimes standing pat or just doing a little bit to tweak is the best thing to do. And if you know you have a good team and you just want to like fill this one little hole that's keeping you up at night, go ahead and do it. Don't pay a lot. And that's pretty much what Don Waddell did here for the Carolina Hurricanes. They are a very good team. However, are they better than Tampa? Are they better than Florida? I think they're better than the Rangers and the Penguins and the Caps, but are they better than Tampa and are they better than Florida? And for that matter, Boston.
I think they're better than Boston. I think you're talking about a three-team race. And I think again, it's the goaltending, and I think Freddie Anderson, although he's never done it in the playoffs, might be closer right now than Bobrovsky as far as trying to unseat Vasilevsky. Mm-hmm. But I'd pay some good money to sign up for that Eastern Conference Final, and pretty much heads or tails. I think that's something that goes seven games and would be wildly entertaining. Look, I'm giving Don Waddell all the props in the world, and I'm going to take his grade back from an A to maybe a B+, maybe a B. Wildly overpaid for Kotkaniemi.
Yeah.
That's
not a trade deadline move. So.
No, but he did it the same day, and like, it's not going to affect him now. But what happens in 3 or 4 years if he's wrong?
If he's wrong, or what happens in 3 or 4 years if he turns into Jordan Staal?
Yeah, if he's right, he's made a ton of savings. And those are the margins that Carolina is going to play with now. And they'll be able to move him if he's not good because of the price tag, probably to somebody else. And that's the way they're going to operate their team. But, on the face of it, you look at it and you're like, what did Jess Berry do? Like, he hasn't done anything yet. He's a nice player, ton of potential, but he's not in that neighborhood where you're locking a guy up for 8 years at decent money off of his resume.
No, you're doing it off of what you think his long-term potential is, and I do. I mean, it's possible that he could turn into the next Jordan Staal for them, that type of player. And Staal's got a few years left, but Kotkaniemi's got a few years to get there too, So there is that. Let's turn our focus quickly to the West, Colorado, right? So we know they added Josh Manson. This is the best team in the league on paper, right? They're the best team in the league on the ice. They have the most points. They add Josh Manson. That makes their D better. I like the addition of Arturi Lehkonen. I really do. I think that's a sneaky good addition. This is a guy who's played big games, just did, with the Montreal Canadiens. He's not a big-time scorer, but he can score a big-time goal as he did last season for the Canadiens. And he's versatile in the same way, not in the same exact way, but he's versatile sort of like Andrew Kopp is now that he's with the, goes to the Rangers. He can play in all types of situations. He's not going to go in to unseat one of your big guys. I like that addition. I think it just makes the Avalanche a little bit deeper, a little bit harder to play against, gives them an extra scorer in their bottom six. They are another team that's been a little bit top heavy or a lot top heavy. And then you get a guy like Andrew Cogliano, who's been around a long time, but the one thing Cogliano can still really do well is skate. And you have to be able to skate if you play for the Colorado Avalanche. And I think those are, Manson, Cogliano, and Lehkonen are solid additions, for a team that was already looking pretty darn good.
Yeah, no, for sure. And look, Cogliano kills some penalties for you. He's been through all the wars. The one thing, Arturi Lehkonen must be pretty good, because I thought that was a pretty steep price. Like, Barron is one of their both Barron brothers got traded today, by the way.
Yeah.
The Rangers one did as well. But, he's one of their best prospects, Justin Barron, and a second round pick. It's going to be lower because Colorado, is the best team in the league, and you think they're going to go deep. So you're looking at a, 28 to 32 type of pick. So you're almost into the third round. And I guess it was a premium paid for a little bit of salary retention to help Colorado be able to facilitate that. But that's a pretty good price for a bottom six forward. But, who am I to question Joe Sakic? He never misses. And that, I'm not even being sarcastic or facetious. Like, that dude's got to be hitting slow pitch softball, 650, 700.
You know what, though? What they're really good. We know that. But they don't have a lot of guys who've been deep either in the playoffs, And if anybody, right, that's been really deep into the playoffs. And Lehkonen just played in the Stanley Cup Final. Darren Helm's, been one of those guys, too. He just played in the Stanley Cup Final. I think there's value in that, too. Like, you're bringing in a guy who knows what he's about to get into and has won in that situation, whereas the Avalanche – they've had minimal success. They haven't gotten out of their second round in the last 3 years when expectations have been really raised in the last two. So you pay that price. I get it. And you're paying a little bit more. You're, like you said, for the salary retention, and you're giving up a pick that you don't know what it's going to be. And you're giving up a prospect who you like, but you really don't know what he's going to be either for a sure, for what it really is a sure thing.
Yeah. And he's a defenseman, and you look at Colorado's defense and
right.
He could be, you know,
he's buried. Like where are you going to play him?
He could be a Colton Pareko, and where are you going to play him? Right? Byram's coming back now. They like him. You know, all the other guys that have McCarr, Taze,
Gerard.
I mean, like there's, you know, how many defensemen can you have? And the only thing is he's cost certain, right? As their numbers start to go up and they're going to have to start moving guys as they go into their next contract. Like you have that guy waiting who's going to play on a low contract for 3 years before you have to give him money. That, to me, that's the main reason you'd hold on to him. But again, we've talked about it with other teams, right? Like you talked about Tampa Bay and the picks they have. Florida has less. You know, they've totally mortgaged their future to make all of this happen. And so what does Colorado care? They're in the middle of their window right now. Like, who cares who our draft picks are? We're not going to see them for 5 years. So let's get rid of them and get sure things and go from there. So, like I said, I would be the last one to question Joe Sakic because he very rarely misses.
Right. So we say that Colorado got better and Minnesota got better. What about St. Louis? St. Louis added Nick Leddy. That was the big add for them, right? To me, nice player, you know, 31-year-old Nick Leddy can still wheel it. I mean, he's still got the wheels to move the puck. And maybe that's a big reason why they added him. But his game doesn't fit with what I see from the Blues. So I was a little surprised by that. I don't think it's a bad move necessarily by Doug Armstrong, their GM. It just kind of caught me off guard that Nick Leddy would be their big deadline acquisition on D, you know, especially on a left side that I think is already pretty good and a D that, you know, is pretty good too. I was a little surprised that was the type of player. He doesn't seem like a Craig Berube type of player.
No, and he might not be, but I also think that's a reflection of Armstrong, right? And kind of the way he looks at his team. I think he's being very honest about his team, and he's being very honest about the situation they're in. And he's looking around and he's saying, well, Colorado's an all-timer, mm-hmm. right? What's Vegas going to be when they get healthy? Calgary's is probably the best team in the league since November, right? And you know, how many of these teams can I beat? Who am I going to draw in the playoffs, and how much of my future am I going to auction off to maybe beat these teams, maybe not beat these teams? Like, I think that's a really important part of your job as a GM. You know, everybody wants to add at the deadline. I got to add. Everybody else has added. I need to add. Look, everybody else has a Maserati. I need to go buy a Maserati. Like, sometimes you don't have the budget to buy a Maserati, and you're not going to eat if you buy the Maserati. So I think, you know, that's what he's done, right? Armstrong, the GM, he's kind of looked at his team and said, maybe if we get on a roll, we can win, but maybe we can't. Maybe my best team can't beat Colorado's middling team in a 7-game series. Maybe they can't beat Minnesota now because of the ads that have been made. You know, if you're honest about your team, you try and do everything you can to help, but you don't pay the prices that were being paid, you know. Like I said, this was a complete seller's market. When you look at some of these deals and what selling teams were able to get, you know, Chicago has 3 first round picks from the moves that they were able to make. Montreal made out like bandits. The Seattle Kraken have 35 draft picks in the next 3 years. You know, they added 10 mm-hmm. to this year's draft class. So at some point, again, like, you have to be sober and you know, not get caught up in what the Joneses are doing and say, my team's good. They're not great. I can't make them great at a price that'll allow me to survive for the next 4 years. It's going to cost me too much. So we'll just take our chances.
Yeah, they still added. I mean, he did add Nick Leddy, though. I mean, he didn't give up, you know, a ton of future.
No, he gave up almost nothing.
Well, he gave up Sundqvist and Wallman. I mean, Sundqvist was an important player for them, but injuries have taken a lot of his game away, so to speak. You know, and I think Nick Leddy can play for them, but they already, you know, you look at their left side and you're talking about Torrey Krug. You're talking about Marco Scandella on the left side as well. And you're talking about, you know, Nico Mikola, who is actually, I thought, been pretty good for them. And he's big. He's 6'5", 210 pounds, you know, so interesting. Let's see where Nick Leddy fits in and how he fits in there. You know, he's been a really good power play guy, right? He moves the puck and he can handle it and play the point on the power play. Well, I mean, the Blues are third in the league on the power play, so it's not exactly a great big need for them. But he's a good player, so yeah. He should on paper make them a little bit better. I just want to see how that kind of fits in, you know, like with what they've got going on there.
Yeah, and I don't think it's a player. Like, I thought it was very telling. Torrey Krug, who's gone deep with the Bruins in the past and, you know, was like, I think it was today. If it wasn't today, it was yesterday. He said, we're not ready.
Yeah.
We're not ready to play playoff hockey. We need to fix our house. And he's not talking about go get us some players, go get us help. He's saying that they're not ready. Mentally, they are not ready to play the style and sacrifice the things that need to be sacrificed to win in the playoffs. And they need to get that in order more than they need to get players in there. They're a team that's won the Stanley Cup. A lot of that core is still there. You know, a good goaltending duo. Probably one of the biggest questions going into the playoffs, which we'll be talking about in 40 days, is who starts for the St. Louis Blues in the playoffs.
Right.
And if you have two goalies in the playoffs, you have no goalies in the playoffs, right? So they have a team and they have a core that can certainly compete. And I think they're a team made for the playoffs. They'll wear you down. They'll do the same thing they did in winning the cup, right? And the way they wore the Bruins down early in that series, you're like, oh, the Bruins, they got this. And then they forecheck, and then all of a sudden you're in a game seven and anything happens, and the Bruins ran out of gas. So they need to get their house in order, and that's on the players. That's not on the GM. I guess it's a little bit on the coach, but it's really on the players to make that happen.
Yeah, no, I got you. What about let's flip it even further west and go Edmonton. So Calgary makes some ads, right? I mean, they get Toffoli a while ago. They get Cali Yarncrook. They're already really good, and we know that. They've been playing, like you said, probably the best in the league since at least, well, I don't know the number, but at least December probably, or close to it. Edmonton's won 5 games in a row. You're probably, if you're an Oilers fan or Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl, saying, all right, let's go. Like, right, what are you going to get us? What are you going to get us to help us out here, put us over the hump? Defenseman Brett Kulak and forward Derek Brassard. It's like, okay, you know, like, it's like, you know, the air kind of come out of the balloon a little bit. Like, and that's no offense to Brassard or Kulak. I mean, I think Kulak can help them. I think he's a solid player, right? But it's not, and sometimes making the splash doesn't make the impact you want it to make, but I was kind of hoping for more from Edmonton.
With what? They had nothing.
Neither did Tampa.
They had nothing to spend. Not the same thing, dude. It's not the same thing. You're dealing with a lot of different things in Edmonton.
True.
Right? You're not going to get guys to waive their no trades to go there. You know, the tax situation's different. All of those things. Like, he had already made – Ken Holland had already made his moves. He made them early in the season. You know, Kane was probably their trade deadline move. He made it early, but all the other moves were made in free agency, and he put himself right against the wall, and he thought he had the team that can do it. They look a little bit better. Do you believe in them? Do you believe that they're one of the 4 best teams in the West, that they could even get out of the second round?
No,
I don't. So, and his hands were tied. Kenny's hands were tied. Like, you don't think he wanted to make a deal? He makes a deal all the time.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that loves to make a deal. There was nothing he could do. I think he said he had $610,000. Like,
it's a lot of cap space right now.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do with that? You're not going to go get anything all that attractive. And he can't sacrifice the same amount of capital that Tampa Bay can. Because Tampa Bay already has an elite team that's won twice, and they had a pretty good farm system that they've kind of dismantled a little bit to stay on top. But Edmonton has none of that. And you can't empty the cupboard and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. And So sure, people want Ken Holland to do stuff, but it was going to be a miracle for him to do it. Now for me, the team in Canada that I wonder about was Vancouver. They kind of didn't go either way.
Same with Winnipeg,
right?
Both of them.
I guess Winnipeg's still there. I kind of feel like Winnipeg kind of played themselves out. They're going in the wrong direction. Until very recently, I thought Vancouver was coming in the right direction.
Yeah.
But they didn't buy and they didn't sell. They kind of stood right where they were. And you know, I don't know if you can really do that.
Well, I don't think the Canucks are focused on necessarily this season right now. I think this season, whatever happens, happens, you know, for them. I mean, look at it. Like they have 18 games left to play. They're still not in a playoff spot. They're about, well, I think, what, 4 points removed from a playoff spot right now. They're about 500 in their last 10 games. They are 500, 4-4-2 in their last 10 games. They're, see what happens. But, you know, so they trade Tyler Mott. They have JT Miller. He's the guy that everybody talked about, right? JT Miller's having an awesome season. And he might be the right guy to trade at this point because I don't think his value is ever going to be higher than it is right now. But that value, when I say right now will continue into the offseason. And he still has 1 year left on his deal. And if you look at JT Miller in the offseason, it might open up the amount of teams you can be looking at. Teams, you know, right now, some of those sellers will turn into buyers at that point, right? Right now, they're focused on selling and not necessarily on hockey trades like that. It kind of punts the JT Miller decision down the road a little bit, but there is a decision to make. I probably the same with Brock Besser too, right? And maybe a few of their other guys as they try to figure out how they're going to retool this thing. But they don't have to figure that out right now. They're not pending UFAs. They're not rentals. They're not going to lose them for nothing. Tyler Mott's a guy that they looked at and said, nice player, probably not going to be a part of our future. Let's get a fourth round pick. We got a fourth round pick for him. JT Miller, Brock Besser, anybody else that's in this core here that is this going to be our core? Well, we can figure that out a little bit later and continue, you know, when the window opens again, talk to teams, figure it out. And maybe you get better offers too. We don't know the offers they were getting right now. They didn't have to rush to trade those guys. And if they didn't get a slam dunk offer, there was no reason to do it.
Yeah. And their GM, Patrick Alvin, knew in the job and Jimmy Rutherford, obviously above him, but Patrick Alvin wouldn't discuss offers when he had his availability after the trade deadline passed. But like with the market, the way it was, I can't imagine. For some of those teams, if all of a sudden you said, here's JT Miller and you get him this playoffs plus one.
Yeah, but do you want draft picks in return?
I don't know that it would be draft picks. Think about some of the prospects that moved. Think about you could have gotten players. Like, and again, I don't know. Maybe he was out there and you know, the package never became big enough. Right. But, you know, guys that aren't nearly as good as him. You know, look, Rickard Rakell.
Yeah, but he's a pending UFA.
I understand that. And he still fetched Aston Reese, it's Simone, and a pick for a UFA, a high pick.
Yeah, I
now,
get that.
Now you're dangling a kid that's going to go another year who's a better offensive player right now. Like, who knows what the Penguins or somebody else would have offered. And maybe it wasn't there, but I'm just shocked that they kind of stood pat. I think you had to move one way or the other if you were the Vancouver Canucks. You couldn't hold. You either folded or you pushed all in.
See, I think they can move. I think they could have held it. I think they have to move one way or the other in the offseason. I think that's where Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin are probably looking at as well, is they have some time. None of those guys are pending UFAs. All right, quickly, Anaheim, ton of draft picks now. They were in the playoff race for a while. They're not, they obviously were sellers, no question about it. Now they have 12 picks in the first two rounds of the next three drafts. And then the Seattle Kraken, I think it's 34 or 35 picks in the next three drafts, starting with 12 in this year's draft. Both were the obvious sellers at the deadline in who they gave up and the, getting so many picks in return for Anaheim. You think it was the right move?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
They need to restart, right? I mean, you don't know if you're going to have Ryan Getzlaf back. You have an elite goalie in John Gibson, you know, that can cover a lot of sins as you kind of try and rebuild. But it wasn't working with what they had, and they weren't going to be able to re-sign these guys. And so cash out as much as you can. I can't believe that Ryan Kesler is no longer an Anaheim Duck, though.
Yeah,
he was one of the people that was moved in this trade. John Moore, who they got from the got from the Bruins in the Lindholm trade, and the contract of Ryan Kesler went to Vegas in the Dadonov move, which was a clear salary dump, which suggests to me that Mark Stone's coming back at some point.
Well, they needed to clear the space
before the season ends, because everybody's like, oh, they'll LTI them and they can be so much over the cap when they get to the playoffs. They might not get to the playoffs. And so if you're going to take that extra 3 weeks and be like, oh, Mark Stone, he's at 85%, but you know, we've already stashed them away until the playoffs. They don't have that luxury anymore. So they have to move some cap in case he's ready and he needs to come back. And, you know, I think maybe that's the team I was most surprised at. And they were hard up against it, especially with everybody that's hurt and everything else. But Vegas is in desperate, desperate straits. And I understand their trade deadline additions are going to come off of the MASH unit as they start to trickle back, you know, and those are ads that you make that are like trade deadline, not to start the whole, it's like a playoff game again, but they're like trade deadline acquisitions as you get Pacioretty back and you get this guy back and you get that guy back. But they were in desperate, desperate straits. And every time they've had an inkling of being in trouble, they've gone out and made a huge move. And so you kept waiting what that huge move was going to be. And then their huge move was getting rid of their third leading goal scorer and a salary cap dump. So they are going to be, for the next 6 weeks, maybe the most interesting team in hockey.
They certainly will be. Very interesting to watch. And then in the offseason, it seems like the Ducks and the Kraken are going to be very interesting to watch around the draft. But this deadline was very, very interesting. Like we said at the beginning, the live blog, 7,300 words. Sean's email, 7,300 emails. It's been very interesting, very busy. I think we can all take a breather right now, right, Sean?
We should have gone 7,300 minutes on this podcast. But no, I think we can all take the night.
The night.
And then the first team could be eliminated tomorrow in the Montreal Canadiens.
There's some positive news for you.
They need to lose tonight, and then Washington needs to win tomorrow, and they'd be the first team out. But the reason I say that is because immediately we're going to start to turn. You know, the deadline comes. It's 40 days from the end of the regular season. It is every year, so you know. Now the stretch run starts coming. I for the first time yesterday, I got an email with the whole thing, like magic numbers, tragic numbers, who each team plays, you know, and that's the signal that we're in the home stretch. So there's not going to be a lot of rest, because then you start thinking about playoff coverage. You start thinking about the last couple of weeks of the season. So tonight there may be a cold beverage and a slice of pizza, and then back at it on Tuesday, back to the salt mine.
Well, tonight, once this goes up, everyone should listen to this podcast. Also tomorrow and the next day. And then we'll be back with your regularly scheduled programming podcasting at some point. And hopefully you all enjoyed the deadline. Rehash it all on NHL.com. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the hockey.